Welcome to Immigration Nerds. This podcast is for everyone seeking the details, context, and facts behind the banner headlines on immigration. It's the podcast that gives you the latest on immigration policy and politics and the real-world impacts on the people and businesses that make our world turn. If you believe immigration makes us all better, then this is the podcast for you. Brought to you by the nerds at Erickson Immigration Group, guiding clients and their employees through the complex immigration system for over 20 years.
Hello, immigration nerds. I'm Lauren Clark, senior attorney at Erickson Immigration Group. I am a fellow nerd, an immigrant, and host of this amazing podcast. On every episode, we're joined by the smartest nerds in the know as we cover trends in business, culture, technology, and politics at the intersection of global immigration. Today, we are focusing on a category of U.S. immigration that centers on education. The F1 visa is a non-immigrant category that allows foreign students to study full-time in the United States. In 2023, the U.S. State Department issued more than 400,000 new F1 visas, up 8.5% from 2022. But nerds, as you'll hear, evolving classification of college athletes as employees of their schools are subtly raising major questions about international students' continued visa eligibility. Coming up in a few minutes, we're joined by Bloomberg Law immigration reporter Andrew Craigbrum for a deep dive on emerging risks to student visa eligibility. But first, a roundup of the other immigration news that we need to be aware of. And joining us for that, Rob Taylor, of course, our news nerd-in-chief. Hey, Rob.
Hey, Lauren. How are you today?
I'm great. What is topping our news list today?
Yeah, so we have a couple of different things to cover. I think in line with the conversation today, H-1B cap lottery has been completed. So as you know, and as listeners know, a large number of H-1B cap lottery participants are F-1 students. So this will be a very interesting time for them as they navigate the H-1B lottery process. And we move forward with getting petitions filed for these individuals. And as we do move forward, April has brought with us some changes that we've talked about for a while. Unfortunately, they're not April Fool jokes. So we have some new forms that we have to deal with, like the new I-129, new I-140, new I-60, new I-60A. We also have some new fees we have to deal with. In particular, when it comes to business immigration, you know, companies need to assure to account for both the fee increase as well as the new fees, like the asylum fee. And then also related to premium processing, there's been a new fee in effect for a while, but they've also changed the processing times. So what used to be a 15 calendar day processing time has now turned to a 15 business day processing time. So instead of 2 weeks, you're essentially looking at like 3 weeks for an H-1B premium processing case, for instance. So lots of like administrative changes on the business immigration side, not necessarily things that folks who are going through the process may feel so much, but as practitioners, these are all things that we need to be aware of and taking into account. Outside of business immigration, I think probably the biggest update that has occurred over the last month or so is in relation to the Texas SB4 law. So folks may recall last year, Texas passed a law that essentially said that they have, as a state, the ability to arrest and criminalize people who are illegally crossing the border. That was challenged in court, has gone through several courts, made its way to the Supreme Court, at which time they actually said the law can continue as is, but got remanded, I think, to the Fifth Circuit. While we're waiting for that to be kind of redetermined and discussed at the Fifth Circuit, there was a Court of Appeals decision saying that it is, again, temporarily banned. So we'll see what comes from the Fifth Circuit decision and kind of how this plays out. So there'll be more to come, hopefully, soon within the next few weeks. Lastly, just on the international side, I think last year it was announced that the EU/Schengen countries would start requiring, in particular, U.S. citizens to have electronic entry visas, even to visit. And so we've seen that kind of expand beyond the EU. Brazil most recently announced that. It is important to call out for the EU-Schengen thing. They did originally say it would take place in 2024. That's been postponed to 2025. So if you have any immediately plans to like Germany, you can, you know, travel visa free as is, but those changes will be coming into effect in 2025 as of now. And then for Brazil, we're kind of waiting for them to confirm when the effective date will be, but more than likely it'll also be a 2025 effective date. So we'll continue to keep folks surprised there. That's all we have for this week.
Well, thank you, Rob. That sounds like a number of big updates, particularly as a practitioner, things that we need to be aware of in light of that there is no grace period for those April 1st changes. I'm looking forward to cap season more than my March Madness bracket, which unfortunately crashed and burned. But here is to cap season and all of those wonderful changes. So thanks, Rob.
Thank you.
Now for a conversation about how classifying student athletes as employees is at odds with the work limitations of the F1 student visa. And for that, we welcome back to the podcast, Andrew Craigbaum, immigration reporter at Bloomberg Law. Andrew, welcome back to the Immigration Nerds podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure to have you here, Andrew. And as I'm sure many of our listeners are aware, March Madness is sweeping the nation. And while many nerds out there, myself included, are worried about our busted brackets, your reporting has uncovered a serious new risk to international student athletes and their visa status. It centers around a new acronym called NIL, the rights of college athletes to monetize and profit from their personal brand, which consists of their name, image, and likeness. Can you tell us about NIL and how the Dartmouth College men's basketball team kind of tipped all of this into motion?
Sure. So there's kind of two separate issues here. There was a debate, this fight over name, image, and likeness that had kind of been bubbling at the state level for several years. Eventually, some litigation over whether college athletes would be able to basically profit off of their image and likeness made it to the Supreme Court, where the NCAA lost that case. And so they basically opened the doors nationwide at that point in response to the ruling. And so for the past couple seasons, at least, athletes across the country have been able to make money off of those deals, with the exception of international college athletes who are on student visas that have these work limitations. And those restrictions became relevant again more recently when the Dartmouth men's basketball team moved forward with this effort to unionize on their campus.
So I think before digging into kind of the action that's taken and the decisions that's being made, the F1 visa is not necessarily a topic we've dug too deeply into on the podcast recently. But according to your reporting, Andrew, some 20,000 international athletes are enrolled at US colleges and universities on the F1 visa. Can you walk us through essentially what type of work restrictions are these student athletes dealing with?
Right. So the F1 visa, like you mentioned, it's a non-immigrant visa for international students to come to the U.S. and attend colleges and universities here. They are allowed some work opportunities while on that visa, even though it is not considered a work visa. They can work for up to 20 hours a week on campus. That number is higher when classes aren't in session. And then, of course, F1 visa holders are eligible for optional practical training, which many pursue while they try to eventually secure an H-1B visa later on. But those work restrictions on the hours of the visa were relevant in this case because of concerns about whether student athletes could be violating work restrictions if they are suddenly classified as workers on campus. However, I've heard from many attorneys that there's more fundamental issues with the visa raised by unionization efforts and the possibility that college athletes are classified as workers.
And I think that kind of comes to the crux of what the National Labor Relations Board essentially decided, that college athletes can be deemed employees under the National Labor Relations Act. And so with that, it's kind of this potential upending of the F1 visa class as to whether these student athletes are still considered students or in fact employees. Is that kind of a basic understanding of where we're currently at?
Right. So what happened in this Dartmouth case is back in February, a regional director at the National Labor Relations Board ruled that college athletes can be deemed employees, and that allowed the Dartmouth basketball players to move forward with a vote on whether or not to unionize. Now, when that decision came out, I started hearing a lot of concerns from immigration attorneys, especially folks who work with international students, international college athletes, that this raised pretty serious questions about the visa status of these athletes going forward. And I should say that the risk to any athletes implicated here, there's a handful of international players on the Dartmouth team, seem to be pretty far off because the college has said they're not going to bargain with the union for now. So the fight over the union is going to play out over potentially several years. But a lot of these attorneys have told me, you know, the writing is on the wall, essentially, whether you're looking at this case or others percolating at NLRB or in the courts. The expectation here is eventually you see college athletes classified as workers. And if that's the case, it raises pretty serious questions about whether these international athletes would still be eligible for their F1 visas going forward.
And I think that's an important thing to you highlighted in your article and that we're kind of discussing here is that even though students don't have to engage in NIL, the experts that you kind of have spoken with and included in your article do think that it presents a lasting problem for F1 visa holders, primarily that most who need an F1 visa are obtaining it from a U.S. consulate. Is there concern that processing of their visa in the initial instance to come to the United States might be impacted? And then further thinking is once they've graduated, can it potentially impact their ability to transition or change to other non-immigrant visa statuses beyond kind of their F1 period?
Yeah, as you mentioned, college athletes don't have to participate in NIL. There's been at least a handful of notable international college athletes who have signed deals. Some have found a workaround on NIL restrictions by reclassifying to another visa status. Others like Oscar Tshiebwe, former National Player of the Year at Kentucky for their basketball team. He signed NIL deals outside the U.S., like in the Bahamas, for example, where he's from. But I've heard from attorneys that, you know, those workarounds in the NIL case, they don't really work on the scale necessary to address the broad issues raised by potentially classifying all college athletes as workers. And so the thinking here is that we really need to see some kind of action from Congress or from agencies like USCIS or ICE to issue new regulations clarifying the eligibility of these athletes if there is some broader change in legal status that happens.
And is that something that either we are currently seeing from members of Congress or are likely to see based on the research that you've done?
There has been recent legislation introduced last year in the House and Senate, specifically addressing the NIL issue that would allow international college athletes to sign the same endorsement deals as their U.S.-born teammates without regard to visa status. That's one thing that hasn't really gone anywhere. And I think there's not high expectations that lawmakers are going to pass any kind of broader immigration deal soon. When I reached out to the agencies, I heard from ICE that they are engaged in discussions on the topic, but they couldn't offer specific comments on potential changes or regulations that might be issued in response to this issue.
And so, Andrew, obviously Dartmouth is not alone in having international F1 students as athletes. Are there other cases in the pipeline at the National Labor Relations Board or even within, you know, federal court system that could have an impact on this?
Definitely. That's one of the reasons that even though this legal fight over the Dartmouth Union could be playing out over several years, that immigration attorneys consider this a big issue right now. There's one case at NLRB involving University of Southern California athletes where the NLRB general counsel has made arguments that the school controls the scheduling and just the hours from week to week of football players, for one, to such a degree that they should clearly be considered workers. And there's another case at the Third Circuit Court of Appeals right now where attorneys have been arguing that student athletes should be considered employees under the Fair Labor Standards Act. And that case could potentially have a broader impact than either of these NLRB cases, because if a ruling went against the NCAA in that case, it could affect athletes covered by that whole circuit.
So, Andrew, obviously having spoke about F1 visa at the particular scope of international athletes, I think it's worth noting that the F1 visa is kind of a critical part of immigration, as well as just American society, understanding that the F1 visa brings so much talent into the United States, and then that talent generally tries to remain here through, for example, the H1B lottery that we both mentioned previously. Understanding that this particular look at F1 visa could have an impact not only to international athletes, maybe to F1 as a whole, what do you think the value of kind of figuring out this issue for F1 visas is, both to the international athletes and to the F1 visa as a broader category?
It's an interesting issue because it affects a small slice of the F1 visa holders, roughly 20,000 international college athletes on F1 visas. And at least in fiscal year 2022, most recent estimate we had from federal statistics, there are more than 400,000 users of F1 visas in the U.S. And this is a pretty critical source of talent for the country. A lot of colleges and industry groups will say those F1 visa holders are the folks who end up eventually filling really high demand STEM, engineering, tech jobs, where the country would struggle to find workers otherwise. And of course, many of those folks go on to, they work for U.S. companies while they're on optional practical training, or many hope eventually to secure an H-1B visa, most likely where they can continue to work in the U.S. The concern you hear from industry groups and immigration advocates continuously is that there are just not enough slots available in that H-1B category for all of the F1 students who want to stay here and work to do so. And that has potentially pretty negative repercussions for the ability of the U.S. to recruit and retain the talent we need for the economy.
And so in terms of understanding the impact for student athletes on F1 visas as it currently stands, I know you noted that, you know, there likely won't be immediate effects for example, the Dartmouth players. Is it likely for anyone who is an Immigration Nerds listener, possibly an F1 student athlete, that they really need to work with their schools to understand kind of the impact to their F1 visa and also to track kind of the cases that are going on to understand the long-term impacts for them?
I think this is something that colleges and general counsel offices at colleges will probably be watching pretty closely going forward. I would imagine that these kinds of conversations have come up in the NIL context involving international college athletes, although I haven't had specific discussions with schools about that. Eventually, especially if there's more rulings against the NCAA in these cases, that this is going to get a much closer look from colleges, and they may be pressing federal agencies a lot more for clarification in the future on the status of these athletes.
Well, I'm sure this is a topic that we're going to continue to monitor well beyond the end of March Madness. So Andrew Craigrone, immigration reporter at Bloomberg Law, thank you so much for joining us once again on the Immigration Nerds podcast.
Thanks again. Great being here.
And thank you to all you nerds out there listening. You can find a link to Andrew Craigrone reporting on this in our show notes. And you can track everything going on at Erickson Immigration Group at our website, eiglaw.com. And remember, if you believe immigration makes us all better, then this is the podcast for you. Subscribe and share, and meet us right back here for another new episode of Immigration Nerds.